This is the Money Talks Podcast with Michael Campbell.
Welcome to the Money Talks Podcast. So much going on. Government's declaring a state of emergency, mega companies like Apple closing all of its stores outside China, historic moves on the bond and stock markets, and there's one thing that's very important. There's something historic lurking just below the surface. Hi, I'm your host, Michael Campbell, and we have an important episode lined up for you today. I'm going to be joined by top analyst David Morgan on gold and silver, Ozzie Jurek on the impact of the oil decline and COVID-19 on real estate. But first, by the way, you know it's serious when The Bachelor drops to number two on Yahoo Trend atop trending subjects. But I'm not going to hold my breath for the biggest, most important aspect of the current financial turmoil to even make the list. But that's okay, because you're listening to the one show that understands that it's probably the most important financial and economic challenge we face. It was pivotal in our call that January 18th, the end of the month, would mark a major change in the markets. And that's when it started. And by the way, because of this financial issue, our concern is escalating. If you want a big headline, well, here's the story. I call it the most important financial story that will undermine the entire monetary system and lead to major changes. Now, big statements like that are hard to fathom. But I'll ask you to this. Well, you can mark it down. Because I know no one else is going to talk about this. Because this is not your run-of-the-mill problem. It requires an understanding of the system. You might remember back in September, I was boring and relentless. I went on and on about the breakdown in the overnight credit markets. I called it the biggest financial of the story of the year. And if you're a regular listener to Money Talks, you heard me say repeatedly that overnight borrowing rates on September 16th went from 2 to 10% in a matter of hours. I asked people to think about that. Hey, you want to renew your mortgage? Presto, it's up five times. But you know what? It didn't even make a headline. Didn't hear it on a newscast. Can't remember a single story. Well, in the subsequent months on this show, we begged people to review the risks they were taking in their investments because, as we consistently stated on Money Talks, starting at the end of January, a major change was coming to the markets. And it would be made dramatically more extreme because of serious liquidity problems. So let's flash forward to today. Well, the impact of the coronavirus is the catalyst for the sell-off. I mean, helped along by the oil price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia. But liquidity problems are the underlying reasons it's been so vicious. Problems in the credit market are exploding due to the impact of COVID-19. Businesses see their, you know, all of their action dry up. Companies see their cash flow decline. But they still have to make their interest payments. No different than you and I. We have a mortgage. All of a sudden we lose our job, the interest payments don't change. We got a problem. Now think about this. Who wants to lend them the money to see them through this tough times? Which is the point I'm making today. We are in an escalating lending crisis, and I'll explain by way of a question for you. So listen up. Would you like to lend money for the next 3 months while we wait and see how the COVID-19 problems play out to an airline company? How about, would you like to lend your money to a manufacturer suffering from a supply chain disruption? Oh, how about lending money to the Italian banks? Come on, they've had serious solvency problems since 2018. How about lending money to the banks who loan money to the Italian banks? And if you do, well, we'll give you an annualized rate of return of 2%. Come on, that's three times more than you get in a three-month government treasury. Would you want to do it? I suspect for virtually all of us, the answer would be no. The money looks a lot better in our own pockets, especially when you're talking about a 2% return. And that gets to the heart of the biggest problem facing us financially and economically. In September, financial institutions literally did not want to lend money for a day or 10 days or 14 days. They didn't trust the borrowers to pay it back. They didn't know if they had problems on their balance sheets, even when the loan was only for 24 hours. So on that fateful night, September 16th, it had completely dried up. Everyone said no. Well, if you want to give me 10%, I'll say yes. And that's the story. So the Federal Reserve was forced to step in, provide tens of billions of dollars to keep the overnight lending market functioning. And they've been doing it ever since. They keep saying they're going to pull back. Well, they haven't been able to, not even close. Earlier this week, they provided $192 billion over a number of short-term loans to make sure it kept functioning. Their whole point, and this is important to understand, they're trying to keep interest rates down. They know if interest rates popped up because of the excess risk, well, we'd have economic calamity hit us, much more than we're seeing today. But here's the thing. It used to be, I don't want to lend you the money for, you know, a day, maybe up to 14 days. Now that's been extended to 3 months. In other words, the problem's getting worse. So the Federal Reserve's been forced to step in again. They've promised actually $1.5 trillion to keep those short-term lending markets going. Otherwise, you'd see much higher interest rates. See, they've got to compensate the lenders. I mean, in normal times, when risk goes up, as it is today, as you well appreciate, in normal times, as risk goes up, what you see is higher rates. You got to get compensated for the risk. No, the actions of the Federal Reserve are playing a huge part in that short-term market, the only part, to keep interest rates down. You might have noticed this. I think it was Friday, Finance Minister Morneau announced $10 billion for a credit line for business because they're going to have trouble getting financing from the normal channels. So the government's saying, we're going to make sure that's still existing, $10 billion. The day before, by the way, the Bank of Canada announced $7 billion for its bond buyback program. It wants to increase the amount of money in the system. It's a liquidity problem. But what's been completely missed in the coverage is that these moves aren't being taken because of COVID-19. No, back in September when you had the overnight lending crisis, it had nothing to do with it. But it's because the credit markets are not functioning normally. As I wrote to Money Talk listeners and posted on our Money Talks Facebook page, and this is back in October, I said declining confidence and the lack of liquidity is a recipe for a no-bid market. That's what keeps me up at night. Well, we started to see that. Saw it in the credit markets. Nobody wanted to be on the other side. Central bank stepped in. But we've seen it in the stock market in the last 2 weeks. All of a sudden, we'll get through periods in the day where there's not close to enough buyers on the other side. It's not an orderly market. So they closed both the U.S. and the Canadian markets. They give it a time out so they can get a more orderly market. This is a liquidity problem. Two questions, though, and these are the big ones. I'm finishing with this. There's a lot to talk about on this, but I'm worried of people's attention span. Two questions. What happens when lenders start worrying about lending, not for just one day or 14 days? Now it's 3 months. What about when it's 6 months or a year or 3 years? Well, you don't have a market then. And the second one, again, completely overlooked in everything you're reading here. How long can the Federal Reserve and other central banks, how long can they be successful in keeping interest rates down when increasing risk demands that they rise? That's the worry I have. It's like loading a spring. It's going to happen. I can't tell you if it's going to happen next month or in the next 18 months or 2 years, but that's the time frame. Then you're going to see a change. I could go on and on about that aspect because it's being completely ignored when I read economists weighing in on the interest rate picture. Well, to be blunt, I don't think they get it. One final note. If a commentator, and I'm including economists, financial advisors, policymakers, don't understand what's going on in the credit markets, they don't understand what's happening. And they certainly don't know what's coming next. Rob Levy joins me on the line now. Rob, I want to start with breaking news from this morning, which is Apple is going to close all of its retail stores, which is, when it's the big name like Apple, obviously that's noteworthy.
It is, Mike, and it really shows, you know, the depth of this economic crisis, this collapse in demand that's going to take place, and it separates, I think, you know, you can get overwhelmed with the big picture that's going on, the sell-off in the markets, but here are some company-specific details. Apple has 500 retail stores around the world, and in their last fiscal year through to September, in combination with their online sales, but they use their retail stores to leverage those sales, accounts for 31% of the company's $260 billion in sales. So it's significant because those stores now close down for the better part of a month.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Of course, Tim Cook, the CEO, says it's the best way to minimize the virus's transmission. you know, to reduce that kind of interaction, you know, reduce density and maximize social distance. So that's one of the latest, you know, it's just an amazing story, this domino effect. And the other I want to just throw at you out of the blue, though, is obviously the travel industry's been front and center right from the get-go. But, man, I was shaken up by some of the comments I heard by British Airways CEO Alex Cruz.
Absolutely surprising, because the talk of this is a health crisis like no other. And then the Financial Times caught wind of a memo that he wrote to his employees last week titled "The Survival of British Airways." And we got to throw in the caveat that British Airways leading into this crisis was one of the best capitalized airlines in Europe. I think they're three in terms of their net debt compared to their earnings, only behind Ryanair and EasyJet, and they're not like some of the basket cases like Air France KLM, which is extremely leveraged. Mm-hmm. This is one of the, you know, well-capitalized, more managed debt airlines, and he says this instance for the airline industry, and he's been through prior events, 9/11, SARS, the global financial crisis, COVID-19 is worse than any of these that the industry's ever seen before.
Yeah, I mean, the fallout, as you say, you know, I was looking earlier and there's a debate, and I appreciate people want to be psychologically positive, but whether the kind of decline we've got is sort of what they call a V, like we go down, but then we bounce right back up, which, you know, it's interesting. For example, British Columbia was one of the few areas to do that coming out of the 2008 financial crisis, because real estate recovered so much quicker than many other areas. So that's the big debate. But I see this, you know, when you hear stories like that, man, I see that discussion of a V recovery being losing a little bit of credibility.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think that's exactly what we saw in the markets the last week. You know, as you relate to the financial crisis, global economic activity declined 4.2%, but then people got back to work and we were climbing out of that. There was devastation, I'm not discrediting that, but there was moving forward from that point. This time, what's different about this scenario, and economists have talked about it, some have, is the idea of a sudden stop. Eventually, when everything just comes to a standstill and you have to rebuild from that, it's extremely deteriorating to consumer confidence. Layoffs take place, and then you have to rebuild these networks, or rebuild these fly routes or scheduled routes, and rebuild business connections. And taking off from there is a much more challenging picture for an economy. And as you said, it sort of throws the V-shape out the window. An extended U or even an L-shape recovery comes into question now.
Let me just quickly, Rob, on your personal business, Border Gold, bordergold.com. I'm always liking, you know, because you're on the ground, you're seeing people's reaction to all of this. And, you know, I'm going to talk with David Morgan coming up about, you know, silver, about gold. What have you been seeing, though? Are you seeing people saying, hey, I hate the market decline, I'm going to sell all my gold? Or I love that when the decline, you know, any kind of $100 move happens, I'm jumping back in. So what are you seeing just on the ground?
Exactly right, Mike. This, to me, and this is when I started in the business, echoes the financial crisis, where people want to own physical gold and silver. There's a few factors. Any time we see a price move like we did over the last week, gold had its worst week, I think, in 8 years. People buy the dip, so they're jumping into the market. But we're also seeing a wave of buyers that are coming in, and they want to hold and own physical metal. To me, it's the negative wealth effect that we're seeing in the markets. When stock markets go higher, everybody feels rich. They spend more money. They go to restaurants. When people see their portfolios decline by 20% in 14 trading days, that hits them. They don't feel secure, and they go to precious metals as that form of security. And that's what we heard. That's what we saw from our customers this week. So there's still the story, you know, people selling in gold and silver to raise liquidity, get some cash flow, because maybe they have margin calls or they want to be opportunistic in this market. We were net sellers, and this is an industry that's limited by production and logistical supply chains, no different than any other industry right now. You look at grocery shelves, which are barren. Metal's going to get backed up too, and it's in very strong demand.
Well, I'm going to give you a plug here, Rob, because people want the latest prices and commentary on it. I'll just invite them to go to bordergold.com, bordergold.com. And because you can get that. I do it all the time. I just check, you know, 3-4 times a day what's the latest price on a variety of things. So I know you're going to be busy, and I appreciate you finding time this weekend.
Oh, always time, and love talking to people so they can call us too. But thank you, Mike.
Here's another aspect of the metals market that I wanted to talk about. So I want to go to an insider. Jim Patterson is CEO of Valour Minerals. Jim, first of all, appreciate you taking the time. Let me just start. I wanted to know something about palladium, and the reason is this. I mean, I'm looking at charts all the time. In fact, I worry about how much time I spend looking at charts. But you look at palladium, and I know you guys are right there with it. So, you know, what is it, up $1,000 in the last year?
Yes, although it was down about $600 over the last week. But it's still
that's what grabbed my attention here. And do you see, I mean, there's a lot of stuff, you know, babies getting thrown out with the bathwater, a lot of things because they feel that there's a significant change in the environment, but other times everything just goes down together. So let's talk a little bit about the environment for palladium, and the thing that jumps out, of course, is the automobile sector.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that we can probably both agree that government control and regulation will not decrease after the coronavirus. And certainly those regulations have affected the automobile sector, particularly in areas like China, where they're the manufacturing hub of the world. And they're loading all these catalytic converters, which is a part of the engine, to with palladium and platinum to reduce noxious fumes. So basically to make the output cleaner. So, you know, I think that trend is definitely going to continue. And as that continues and it affects the automobile sector, they load more and more of these automobiles with palladium or platinum, the PGMs.
I was going to say it's dangerous to sort of assume why people are buying or selling different things. And I mean, obviously, there's been a trigger with the COVID-19, made more negative by the oil price shock, that kind of stuff. And we've seen, you know, China being the most affected, you know, their automobile sector has been just devastated in terms of purchases, which then means manufacturing. But I guess for me, the question is, when this sorts itself out, and it may take a year, you know, who knows, or 2 years, well, I don't know. But when it does, you know, do we resume that trend, as you're alluding to? Are we still going to be concerned about emissions? And I guess I'm saying yes. I don't see that, which creates the opportunity for things like palladium.
Yeah, I don't think that the desire to have a cleaner environment will change. I don't think regulations will reduce. I think the cut in the oil prices probably would not affect negatively the building of combustion mm-hmm. engine cars. I think that trend will continue. And it doesn't really change the bigger narrative, which is the demand outstrips the supply in palladium. The production of palladium is highly concentrated within five companies.
Well, that's
in three
the point.
Countries.
So you're saying, you know, the physical palladium is produced by, you know, in certain regions, seems to me they got some political risk, but only a few companies. How do we go about approaching it as investors?
Yeah, just to clarify that point, about 85% is from three countries, Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Russia, definitely political risk. Five companies have about 85% of the marketplace, so it's highly concentrated. So if you want to play it, there's a bunch of ways to play it. I guess your listeners probably want leverage. I know I do as an investor, but you could buy the physical palladium from an online store and actually hold it. You could buy the ETF, which is PALL, and I don't think it gives much leverage, but there's definitely more liquidity in that. There are only five companies of scale in the world, and most of them trade on foreign exchanges like in Moscow, in South Africa, and only one trades on the big board in the mm-hmm. U.S., that's Sibanye-Stillwater. So, you know, I'm pretty biased, obviously, but I love the junior mining sector, and I like to leverage along with that. So, you know, there are a number of companies that are explorers or developers that you could follow. What? So, you know, and so continue, sorry.
No, I was just going to ask quickly. So, yeah, you know, palladium has fallen with this big market sell-off. They're worried about demand's going to be reduced as, you know, demand for cars, and then it translates back to demand for the minerals like palladium. But when you're looking at it going forward, do you see, you know, I'm just thinking there that's when you want to be buying stuff. You know, the timing I'll discuss throughout the show here today is just generally in the markets. But the point is, do you see opportunity in the smaller sector on this?
I do, and I think that the narrative is the same. It was the markets were in deficit before this all happened.
Yes.
And so, you know, once the economic machine gets rolling again, it's probably going to happen in China first, the consumption will resume. and the deficit will remain. So I don't think there's a real issue there. There may be a bit of a stumble here along the way, but it doesn't change sort of the narrative, which is highly concentrated in deficit and tightly controlled by a few different companies. So the opportunity to juniors is that these big companies are trying to diversify away from high-risk jurisdictions where they're currently producing the metal, and they're making acquisitions in North America, in the Americas in general. So the juniors hold those projects in the Americas, and the big guys looking to diversify risk and expand their profile will be looking at smaller companies that have these assets, these mineral resources that are controlled by a junior exploration company.
Well, I think it's a fascinating sector. People should have it on their radar. Jim, thanks so much for finding time and appreciate you staying longer with us.
It's an honor. Have a great Saturday.
Coming up, top analyst David Morgan. We're going to talk gold and silver. Ozzie Jurek's going to drop by, though. We've got another interest rate cut, but it's versus all of the calamity that you're seeing thanks to COVID-19 and, of course, the oil drop. But first, time now for this week's quote of the week. And for it, we're going to go to one of the most renowned books of mob mentality, Charles McKay's Extraordinary Popular Delusion and the Madness of Crowds. Famous book, published in 1841, and still well worth reading. Whether you're trying to understand financial manias, like the collapse of asset bubbles, you want to understand the Salem witch trials, McCarthyism, or dare I say it, climate alarmism, where anyone who doesn't buy into the entire dogma is hounded, academics ostracized for challenging the climate catastrophe narrative. He writes, by the way, his book, so many different examples of why people willingly abandon critical analysis because, hey, you know what? Everyone's doing it. In quotes, men, it has well been said, think in herds. It will be seen that they go mad in herds, while they only recover their senses slowly, one by one. Man, it's been said, think in herds. It will be seen that they go mad in herds, while they only recover their senses slowly, one by one. And I'm going to give you a bonus quote, still out of that book. And it's a painful reminder in this kind of an environment we're in. You know, it's interesting for me to get a lot of feedback and emails talking about, it's not that they didn't believe our warnings on Money Talks about what was going to happen late January, but they still chose not to review and reduce their investment risk. So the quote comes from legendary investor Bernard Baruch, who's quoted in the book saying, "I never lost money by turning a profit." I'm very pleased to welcome back David Morgan to the show, The Morgan Report, which you can find straightforward at www.themorganreport.com. David, thanks for finding time on a very busy week.
Well, Michael, it's always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Well, can you just give me your quick overview of what you've been seeing, what some of your takeaways are from what we've been seeing market action-wise in the last while?
Well, obviously, uncertainty. Markets are in disarray, super volatile, and I'd say panic. I think that's really not too strong a word to use, Michael.
Yeah.
Basically, it's the everything bubble except the precious metals. And yet even the precious metals sold off with the panic, including gold and silver in a almost historic way, because silver got well above the 100-to-1 gold silver ratio. And I think the last time I checked, it was around 106.
Well, you know, it reminds me of back, and this is dating myself, but it's one of the few times there's an advantage in that. But I remember in 1987 with the crash, and there was the big questions: Why do things that should benefit, like gold or like silver, sell off? And my answer very quickly was, you know what? Because people have problems in other areas, and they want to. So they have a tendency not to sell their losers, but to sell their winners. They can't bring themselves psychologically to the stock's already down 40%, so they're not selling that. But they say, hey, I made some money in the last while in gold and silver. I'm going to sell that. I wouldn't, you know, obviously we don't have data on people's psychology that way, but man, that would be my bet. What we're seeing to some extent is these liquidity problems.
Exactly. And I'd add on to that, Michael. Remember, central banks, though they poo-poo gold all the time on the mainstream financial channels, they've been accumulating since the 2008 financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Which means when they get in trouble, which they do, bank to bank, pension fund, call loan, who knows, they will sell gold because it's the most liquid asset. And as you said, it's probably the only thing on that given day or this week or so that looks pretty good, pretty easy to off. Someone's going to buy it. So it's not only your retail investor or maybe your, you know, fund manager type, but some of the central banks themselves say, look, we've got to get liquid fast. We need dollars. We need yen. We need pounds. We sell gold.
Yeah, and that leads to, okay, so what, when you approach the market today, what kinds of things are you looking at? Are you starting with sort of that macroeconomic view? Like I reported this morning with Rob Levy that, you know, Apple's closing all of its retail stores outside of China. All I'm saying is that will be interpreted negatively by the stock market, you know, will provide fuel for the down move. So how do you approach looking at sort of a broad timing measure of when we recover here? And I'm talking specifically, by the way, in terms of silver and gold.
Well, Michael, you've known me long enough. You know, I am a top-down analyst, which means you've got to look at the biggest picture first and then hone down. And so it goes beyond silver and gold, which I'll get to. But right now, this coronavirus, no matter how it originated or any of the facts as far as how dangerous it is, could one be a cover for the financial breakdown that's occurring simultaneous to it or triggered it? I really don't care. The reality is it's here. Now, the question becomes how long and how wide and how deep. And the answer to that is no one knows. So I'm approaching this as a total unknown. So I have a saying I use quite often that when in doubt, stay out, which means if I don't know how long this is going to occur and how deep it's going to go and how long it's going to last, probably the best thing to do, as much as the metals as I am still and have been for decades, doesn't mean it isn't smart to just wait. I put even some of my top share on holds, very few buys, and updated my members since then, basically said, you know, we should just hold for a while and wait. Now, I don't want to be a hypocrite because, you know, I have people that pay me for my opinions and thoughts and research and everything else. I did buy some silver at the end of the week. But I didn't buy it all. And why not? Because even though we were at about 100-to-1 ratio, which is an opportunity in my view, maybe it goes to 120. I don't know. I don't want to scare people. But if you're an open-minded person, and I claim to be, and I say, oh, it's only been above 100 or three times, you know, ever, this is it. It's always a spike. It never lasts long. It always has shown a financial crisis. That's something I've got to get on your show. I'll repeat it. Every time the silver race, gold silver race has got to 100 or above, it's been a financial crisis. Well, it's doing its job in that way, certainly scaring a lot of silver bulls, you know, huge ways, because, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. We're at like 1850 on a false breakout. Now we're in the 14s. In a matter of not many trading sessions. So that's my approach. I want to talk about gold now. This is more important. Why? Because gold is the money metal. Silver's been moved to the sidelines for over 100 years. And gold has traced out a very large cup. And a cup and handle pattern is the most powerful technical pattern that exists. I'm convinced of it. I studied this stuff for 40 years, as you know. And so we have had a huge cup traced out in gold to this point in time. And the problem is it going to break up through the hand? First of all, will it form a handle or not? Somewhat material. If it forms a handle, it's more powerful. Cup and handle is much more powerful than a cup formation. And you guys can look this up on the internet. If you don't know what I'm talking about, please try to stay with me because this is important. So that's around $1,600 US. So what would be perfect, Michael, is for this indecision situation for gold to reflect that and get into a trading pattern. Let's call it between, oh, I'll just pick numbers, 1500 and 1600, back and forth and back and forth. Why? We've seen these moves, you know, up 60, down 60. I mean, it's crazy right now. So let's say it oscillates back and forth in a trading pattern and forms a handle for the next 2 or 3 months. And that's actually what I expect at this point in time. I'm not trying to talk it out of both sides of my mouth. I don't know how deep or long this situation is going to be. But let's say it is, based on history with the metals, about a three-month period. Now, does gold go above 1,600 or below? If it goes above 1,600 U.S. terms, that's it. We are on our way, and I'm convinced, probably the biggest bull run we've seen. However, I have to stay open-minded. What if it goes, it doesn't, it fails to break through the handle? Then that's saying that we're in a massive deflation and everything's going down except the absolute essentials. And as much as I'm a metals head and remain so, doesn't, you can't eat gold. So if you were a gold buyer 6 years ago and you were at about roughly at this price and you've waited those 6 long years and you've got gold, and now it fails to break through that handle, which is theoretical at this point, and it's down to 1,400. And that's the only asset you have. You're going to go spend it to get some food or whatever. So, you know, I'm not trying to be Mr. Gloom. I'm trying to be Mr. Realist. But I really, you know, want to help as many people as I can. I've always had that attitude in my head and heart. And I just think that at this point, the smartest thing to do is wait and watch. Now, as I said, I want to be a hypocrite. I bought silver, but I didn't buy it all because I think it could change. And I'm not so proud to say, well, I know this is the bottom. I don't.
David, lots to talk about, but let's come to the stocks just quickly. We don't have enough time here as usual. That's why I suggest people go to the website at themorganreport.com. But what about the beating that the stocks have taken? Do you think they move in conjunction with the metal when we start recovering, or what are you doing sitting back saying, are you preparing a list of the quality ones that maybe have, as I say, the cliche, the baby thrown out with the bathwater?
Right. Yeah, we are, you know, think that this, we'll see a repeat of 2008, which means we'll end at some point. I looked at it pretty hard yesterday, and as I said earlier, it was about a three month bottom. Gold went down with everything in 2008. It just went down less than everything else. And it was the first to start up. Silver went up from the $9 bottom all the way up to $50. And the similarity in silver this time is very similar to 2008. You couldn't buy physical silver very easily. And that's a fact right now. I've talked to several dealers and a couple wholesalers the last few days, and they are bidding up. A dealer normally buys silver at spot. You walk in, you say, I want to sell my silver. They say, I'll pay you spot. They're bidding over spot just to get product. It's And a lot of dealers, you check their websites, you can verify this. They're out of product, or it's a 5 or 6 week wait. Saw the exact same thing at the 2008 bottom in silver. So that's pretty much a repeat performance. That doesn't guarantee it's not going lower, but it is indicating that there's a tightness in the market. Then the gold stocks followed, and of course the gold and silver stocks outperformed from that time frame of the bottom of the 2008 financial crisis all the way to the top in April of 2011. I think we'll see something similar, but I'm too open-minded and, I don't want to use the word fearful, but observant that it could be different this time. I mean, when everybody runs to the bond as safety, the only thing that did well, of course, was the bond market, and it's perceived as safe, but all fiats fail. So in the long term, how safe is that really? But until we see a shift and a reflation, then I think we're going to have to wait. Also, food. You know, there's going to be some food shortages for a lot of reasons, not just people buying more than they normally do and cleaning out the shelves. That's not what I'm referring to. You said, you know, big picture analysis, David. Well, the big picture analysis is, we've had two planting seasons now that haven't performed up to average. They're well below average. And the climate change, believe it or not, I don't care how you're taking on it, I'm going to stay out of that. I'm going to just state that the conditions are such that the yields are not going to be what they normally are, which means that especially Americans, I know it's a Canadian show primarily, but Americans will notice only two things, really. Food prices and gasoline prices. So that may trigger an inflation psychology, even if we're in the midst of a deflation. I hope you're following my logic here.
Yeah, I am.
Because
absolutely,
they don't pay attention to the market or the stocks. Or anything. They, you know, a lot of people think, oh, everyone looks. No, most Americans don't even know what a stock is. But yeah, they sure know what it costs for a loaf of bread. So this could actually work to the favor of the metals, because everyone thinks that they're inflation hedges only. So a lot going on there. On the miners, I listen.
We've only got about 10 seconds left here, so I've got to stop it at that and just tell people to go to the Morgan Report, themorganreport.com. David, you know how much we appreciate you finding time on a busy week like this, themorganreport.com. Well, you can file this under shocking stats that you just can't make up. A ministerial aide in Thailand is accused of hoarding and then selling 330 million face masks. Despite the acute shortage in Thailand, majority of them went, by the way, to China, Hong Kong, and the U.S. at an inflated price. But think about that. There is a shortage of the face masks in Thailand, so a ministerial aide is accused of selling 330 million of those masks outside of the country. Now, of course, many reports suggest that the aide could not have been acting alone, because the exports were actually fully licensed by the Commerce Department. But stockpiling or profiteering from sanitary masks was banned by a government order that aimed to ensure supplies for ordinary consumers. Yet, 150 tons of masks were exported in January, 180 tons in February. And now, making matters a little easier for investigators on this one, they have the businessman and the ministerial aide on camera talking about this. But what's so funny is the businessman, they've got on his own Facebook page, holding up a mask and saying on his website, in quotes, "We have plenty. Don't worry. You can get it as long as you have money. Look out." By the way, violators face up to 7 years in prison. But that doesn't sound like near enough. It's funny, as I say, that just shocked me. When I read that story, I said, you know what? You can't make this up. Are you kidding me? Shortage of face masks in Thailand, and someone, part of the government, hoards and then sells them at a profit, of course, a big profit, mostly going to China, Hong Kong, and the U.S. Wow. Speaking of things that make you go, wow, Ozzie Jurek joins me on the line right now. Ozzie, I think we can truly say that yesterday's half-point decline in the interest rates, again, the bank rate from the central bank, on top of, I think it's a week, last Wednesday's a week ago Wednesday, and, I think that did catch people by surprise. But I've been thinking about the real estate market here. And let's start with, what impact does that sort of surprise announcement yesterday have on the rates?
Well, first of all, it's a huge surprise all in 1 week, after we waited for years. But normally, if you reduce the prime rate, the banks usually follow somewhat. They haven't yet, but if they did follow that 1% drop on the prime into a mortgage, you could see maybe a 1.95% a mortgage rate. The thing is, it hasn't happened yet. In fact, what is surprising in this, it's a wild mortgage market too, is that a top broker told me that Scotia dropped their variable discount from prime minus 0.65 all the way to no discount. So that's actually an increase. So the broker, like yesterday, got a 3 o'clock email saying, we're going up at 9 tonight, actually up. So it's still a very confusing picture.
Well, but you're bringing up a key point just for understanding how the markets work, is that the banks, the central bank, in our case, the Bank of Canada, can lower, the overnight rate or the short-term rate, but the banks don't have to follow suit. Again, it comes back to what I actually alluded to at the top of the show, is that you can't force lenders to lend, and that's one of the big problems. And just hearing that, Ozzie, gives further validity to my observation, my thesis, that we have a real problem in the lending markets right now, and it's underreported or not reported at all. And that would be a reflection of that, in my opinion.
Well, and certainly for the individual, for us as consumers, it's important to go shopping and make sure that your mortgage broker that you have, you're not dealing with one bank, because your bank might not have followed suit, right? You've got to find a mortgage broker that has access to all the lenders out there and then finds you the best deal possible if you're still in this market. So you just don't assume the government reduces the rate and that means your mortgage comes down automatically too. It may or it may not.
Yeah, well, I noticed that in the 5-year rates, there's, you know, because again, longer term mortgage rates are based off of what the bond market does. And the bond market has had a dramatic decrease in interest rates because prices have gone up. Money's gone into that end of the bond market looking for safety at this point, as at the very least as a short term parking place. But yeah. Again, we've seen a real difference in how much of the decline in the bond market's been passed along in the form of lower 5-year fixed.
Yeah, and that's, but you know, again, the stress test rate now for insured would be about 2.49, we think, plus a 2%. Yeah. That would make a qualifying rate at 4.49. It would have been the lowest that we've had. But you know, the long rates actually went up a tad because bonds went actually up 0.3% in the last 2 years. So we have 2 days. So we have this very weird market. One of the brokers said, Ozzy, it's so volatile right now. It's crazy. I can't go home. Another one said it's been not been this crazy since the subprime meltdown in 2008.
Well, I'm just throwing this out. I'm telling you that the problems within, the internal problems within, we started talking about on this show September 16th when I saw the overnight lending rates went from 2 to 10% because no one wanted to lend. Federal Reserve jumps in. They have been active trying to keep rates down. I'm telling you, this is the biggest story in finance today, and it's underreported, if reported at all. And this is where you see, as an example of where it gets reflected, and people say, what the heck's going on in there? So it's fascinating. But I want to come to a couple other things here, Ozzy, with you. We've been hearing about escalating things about travel bans or non-essential travel advisories, that kind of thing. You know, in the States, I mean, they've got an outright ban on 26 countries and travel from them. We've got a lot of Canadians asking, why aren't we doing it? I wanted to talk about what impact do you think that has, maybe even on the psychology, but on the real estate market?
Well, there's no question that the recreational market will be seriously affected. I mean, if people can't come and go see it, number one, the American that was going to buy won't buy. But more importantly, as you pointed out, psychologically, people say, you know what, I'm going to try and sell all non-essential properties. You and your guests have been talking about it all morning that, you know, I want to get out. I want to get into cash. I want to get into gold. I want to do something else. The last thing they will do is want to buy recreational real estate. So that's normal. And secondly, markets become the stories that people tell about them. And as we have more and more negative story, I mean, your lead that Apple is closing stores outside China, my God, my jaw dropped right to the floor.
Yeah. Well, and that's what's changing. You see, when I've been watching these moves and the governments are trying to address them and they have to address the credit market, which the Canadian government and the Bank of Canada have talked about that. That's what they're talking about when they said we're going to provide $10 billion for business, you know, credit and that kind of stuff. They're really talking about that freeze up in the overnight and the now up to 3-month lending market. But then it comes to the psychology, you know, so they lower rates again on Friday and let's hope they get passed along. I wonder if it's going to, I don't have an answer here, but I wonder if it's going to be enough to overcome the negative psychology that keeps building here.
Yeah, and that, Mike, you just said it. I mean, it's psychology, and particularly in our real estate investment. Now, if I was a homeowner, look, go and look for a family, buy a home, long-term, you're going to be fine. I personally believe that the news about the virus is overblown. It'll peak sometime in April. It probably maybe linger till July, and then it'll be over, maybe till next year, and then we'll have a bigger problem. But you said it earlier, that it's not just the virus or the virus that we're concerned about. That's sort of the additional thing. But I think that we go into the market reports are actually quite good. The market is still strong. Sales are strong. But what will happen, and we're seeing it already anecdotally, I heard through the grapevine, some of the developers are actually canceling advertising, and some of them are closing or contemplating closing their sales offices. They've been there before. And so that's what I'm concerned about. So as an owner, price your property well if you want to sell. As a buyer, still make that low bid for your own home and for your family, because long term, I still believe you're going to be fine.
And I also think what the mortgage rates, you know, let's get another drop here, look at the pressure downward if we can get it, you know, as it matches the bond market. But this is a lifetime opportunity right now to be a borrower if someone will give you the money and you want to be fixed and you want to be longer term. I know that's I'm talking about for safety. You want to be fixed. Because
exactly.
I do see problems in that bond market going out no later than 18 months, but maybe a lot sooner. But this is an opportunity, and it's something I would also suggest to people, check with your mortgager. What would it take for you to blend and extend your mortgage? What penalties would there be? Or to buy out your mortgage and then redo? All of those things. We'll have more time to talk about it in the weeks ahead, Ozzie, but I think there are things to put on the plate right now. In the meantime, go out and have a cheerful weekend.
Yeah, I've been very cheered so far on your show.
Live from the trading desk, Victor Dare. Victor, you nailed it going back several weeks when you said all you're trading right now, not just you, I meant the market, is just trading psychology. And as I say, I think that just nailed it. Fundamental analysts went out the window. Fear took over, panic took over. You know, you name it here. And I'm just fascinated to see, and I might, by the way, I'm going to pat us on the back here on another area. I mean, how many years have we said all panic leads to the U.S. dollar? I mean, and look at what the U.S. dollar did this week.
Yeah, the U.S. dollar soared this week against all markets, particularly against emerging markets. Certainly Canada, the Canadian dollar down 4% on the week. That's a big drop. Mike, I know time is short, so if I could just hit a couple of points here.
Yeah,
I've got
please.
A lot of thoughts that I put up on my website, but I know I was tempted this week to do what I call sell panic. In other words, when the market is just blind with panic, they bid volatility up to just unbelievable levels, and I wanted to sell volatility. But at the same time, because the lack of liquidity in the markets, the bid offer spreads, if I wanted to go in and do something, I can't do that. I couldn't, put the trade on because the spreads were just too wide. What I did do was basically sit on my hands this week. I heard David Morgan there saying, wait, that was definitely on my mind. The markets will be open again next week. I happened to make money this week, not because I'm brilliant, but just because I've had short positions, limited risk short positions in both gold and the stock market for a few weeks now, and that worked out. But, what I was really fascinated by were two things. The bond market had the biggest weekly range we've seen in 30 years, and I think we might have hit the low for the long-term interest rates. And the other thing that was really fascinating, the Commodity Research Bureau Index was at a 48-year low. I couldn't believe it when I first saw the chart. I actually went and checked with Ross Clark, my old friend. You know Ross very well.
Of course.
He really has a great database. And he said, yeah, you're right. It is at a 48-year low. Here's what I think. This is a bigger picture thing. But the buying opportunities here with commodities and commodity currencies, and I mean just, don't go out and just buy them tomorrow. Part of the reason that the CRB broke the way it did was we've had the biggest two-day drop in crude oil since 1991. But there's this massive stimulus that's going to come from the central banks and the governments, and that will be inflationary. Right now, inflation expectations at the consumer level are at a 30-year low. I think that there's a combination here of interest rates going higher and commodities going higher over the next couple of years.
Let me just come to one thing when you're saying about trading psychology and you couldn't pull the trigger on the volatility trade, et cetera. But one of the things, we got a great example today, though. What's happened now is every day we get a new a trenchant of news that's, the market's interpreting negatively. And that's a real key point. When you're in a downtrend, all news is interpreted negatively. Well, today's was Apple's closing all of its stores outside of China. I have trouble believing the market's going to greet that positively.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm looking at here, just from a practical point of view, and, okay, I think the virus news is going to get worse, because more people are going to get tested, and it's going to show up.
Yes.
And the media and the social media spins that number. I mean, I don't know how serious this will be. I just notice that there's a very big correlation between this panic about, rushing out to buy toilet paper and so on. That same kind of psychology comes into the markets. So I'm comfortable to not try to catch a falling piano. I want to let it bounce once or twice if I'm going to go in and do any buying in the market. I don't need to do something in the market with the kind of trading that I do. I don't have a portfolio. I'm mostly in cash and then just take positions. So, I will wait for an opportunity where I've got some idea about how much risk I'm taking, and to just go in and buy the stock market here. And I know we had a huge rally on Friday. You know, was that the turn? Might be. I don't know.
Well, it seemed to me on Friday, though, and I want to be clear, we only have like a minute or so, but, you know, I'm just making an assumption here from my own experiences. You got a lot of people who've made a lot of money on the downside, and they don't want to go into the weekend with that position on because news can happen and they can't get out of the position or into it or what have you. So I got to figure some of that's in there. And of course, there'll be bargain hunters and all that kind of stuff. But I just think part of it is the internal workings of the market that someone says, you know what, I just made a killing playing the commodities to go down, for example. I think I'll close that out and I'll revisit on Monday.
Yeah, you know, that could very well be. In the last 3 weeks, we have had a few face-ripping rallies while the market has had a record drop. So whether Friday was just another one of those rallies within this nasty drop we've had, I don't know at this point. And I'm very comfortable to say I don't know. So in that environment, yeah, I'll wait. As our dear old friend Peter Appleby has said so many times, you know, there's a rumor going around that the markets are going to be open again next week.
There you go. Well, Vic, you go out and have a great weekend. Catch your breath while you can on a Saturday, because I know you're back at it on Sunday. So there you go.
Thanks, Mike.
Time now for this week's Goofy Award. You know, it's impossible to stay away from COVID-19. And in some quarters, it's obviously business as usual. I mean, Iran is blaming the Jews for it. China saying COVID-19 is a product of the U.S. Army. And of course, in several areas, in Italy, for example, Matteo Salvini is targeting migrants for the problem of the outbreak in Italy. I could have gone another direction, though. I could have gone with Utah Jazz player, all-star defender Rudy Gobert, who, after playing in the Raptors, by the way, was in a press conference, and they asked him about, and he'd had a jostle with the Raptors' OG Anunoby, but at the end of the press conference, he started to joke about the coronavirus, and on his way out, he touched every piece of equipment, tape recorder, cell phones, camera, that the media who had it are present. Presto, 2 days later, he's the first NBA player to be diagnosed with COVID-19. Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland was on CBC saying enhanced screening is in place for people arriving from countries with big coronavirus outbreaks. But then we get numerous reports, they're coming in from people arriving from destinations like Rome, saying, no one talked to them. They just received a flyer. It's interesting, though. You think that the threat of COVID-19 is so serious that the government would, you know, just forget about the BS and tell us the truth. Just as interesting, by the way, is the government advising against non-essential travel one moment, but then saying the next that border restrictions don't work. I think it's fair to ask, which is it? But the scenes, here's my goofy though, the scenes of people rushing and shoving in big outlets like Costco with their carts stacked with 2 years worth of toilet paper merits my goofy. I mean, are you kidding? We're being told that it's a worldwide pandemic with an exponential rate of contagion. Biggest threat to the world since the 2008 financial crisis. We're being told our health is at risk. And the response? Oh, I know. I'm going to run out and buy toilet paper. Not just a little, but enough to withstand the greatest onslaught of diarrhea the Western world has ever known. I mean, my goodness. They're prepared to risk getting the virus by getting into big crowds, jostling, touching, that kind of stuff. Wow. Just to solve their fears over being left with a toilet paper shortage. You might want to revisit, by the way, my quote of the week, McKay's, really talking about the madness of crowds. That's all the time we have. I hope you visit my visits comment every day this week. There's so much to keep. Go back. You can go to Michael Campbell's Facebook page. You can go to MikesMoneyTalks.ca. Important times. You got to stay abreast of it. And I like our track record on this. Thanks for joining us today on the Money Talks podcast. If you just discovered the show, please go back and listen to all our past episodes. Now, if you like what you hear, please leave us a rating. Tell us what you think. And tell a friend about the podcast. The Money Talks podcast is available for free on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm Michael Campbell, and I'll see you on the next episode of Money Talks.
Subscribe to the Money Talks with Michael Campbell podcast for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you get your on-demand audio. For the complete show, daily podcasts, and more.